It's the finals, and Alex, Amy, and their brigade of previous contestants are making their way to the finish line. Are they pulling out all the stops for this last challenge? Find out on this episode of America's Next Top Podcaster. Welcome to America's Next Top Podcaster. I'm Brian Ibbett. On this episode, we'll follow Amy through the last week of competition. She, Joe, Bill, and Monica get one last coaching session from Tom, and we'll hear her final submission at the end of the show. But before that, I'll talk to Amy about this last week. I'm here with Amy for finals week. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
This is the last one of these interviews we're going to be doing. I know. And next time we talk, it's going to be the final night, the last end. Night of, exactly. Holy cow. Crazy. You nervous?
Yeah, of course. Did you not hear the last episode I did?
I definitely heard the last episode. Silly question. I'm nervous. I'm nervous for both of you guys, and I'm nervous for just the show, making sure that it goes well. And this is the big one. This is the redo, basically.
Yes.
You get a chance to do, not really do over, but do a second episode to a show that that you did as
yes.
any part of the season here. And you've got a great team with you. You've got Joe, Bill, and Monica.
Yes.
Which is great. I love seeing that it's, you know, going across a couple different some podcasters, but you've also got some Ruth Badger Ginsburgs in there. So
yep,
it's really
yep,
cool.
The metronomes we're repping.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot that you and Bill were in the metronomes together. Yep. Excellent. All right. Well, boy, it's across all the teams here.
Yeah.
So tell me about your plan. What are you working on?
So I got to tell you, we sat and had a chit chat last night, and I tried to talk myself out of culinary capers so hard.
Yeah.
I really did. But that show was my baby. Like that show, I mean, because as soon as you were like, and the topic is going to be food, I was like, this is my challenge. And, you know, it was my concept. It was, you know, it was my voice, and it was what saved me.
Yeah.
When I could have gone home. So I'm going to do it justice and prove that it's not this flash in the pan, and that this show is...
has got the chops.
Yeah, that this is something
good. No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, and I can't blame you because obviously that's one that the judges keep coming back to is a highlight of the season. But the fact is, I mean, you brought it up yourself. This is your baby. This was this wasn't a show that you just contributed to a little bit. You were the source of this thing. You were the concept so it makes absolute sense that this would be the one that you'd want to come back to. And I think, you know, we tried to make it in the announcement of what the challenge was. We tried to make it so that, all right, well, you've got all these other options if you want them. I kind of suspected that this would be,
I mean,
I don't blame you. I think
we
it's
did go back
go
and
back
forth,
to.
Like, especially because, I mean, I wound up, you know, because I wasn't expecting to have to pick two people because of the way we were doing things, but Bill wasn't there. So I picked Monica kind of like last minute. Like, I don't even really know her, but it just like her name jumped out to me. And I was like, all right, well, let's go. Come on. Here we go.
And Monica's got such a great energy.
She does. And that's what that was kind of the part that really got me. It was like, all right, so I've got Joe who has, you know, been my right hand in all these crazy plans. And I have Bill who is a technical whiz. And so I was like, all right, what am I missing? All right, great. I need someone else to be a little bubbly and awesome. So I got Monica. So I did toy with the idea of doing Embrace the Remake, especially since that was done the week I had my teeth out. So I only did production work on that one the first time around. Mm. So I thought it would, you know, it could be good to go back and, and do that one again and do it better. But my baby. I just can't.
Yeah. I don't blame you. And that's funny because that would have been an interesting one. I really wrestled with the idea of making it, making you guys have to pick from a challenge that you had lost or that your team had lost.
Right.
Just to kind of throw that extra wrench in the monkey works, the monkey wrench in the works.
And yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever the phrase is. I'll be honest, the judges talked me out of it. It was,
and I think, I mean, I think doing one that was successful, especially one that wins rather than is even in the middle, I think that is its own challenge, right? Because it's this whole, can you do it again?
You've got to, exactly. You've got
like anybody can make one good one. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's probably a lot easier to take a show that you weren't as successful on and make another episode of it and do it better than it is to take one that right. was a winner and make it better.
Exactly.
So good. All right. Well then, I'm going to have Hammond edit all that out. And I'm going to say that it was my idea all along mm-hmm. to do it that way. Mm-hmm. That's the power of editing.
Yeah.
Great. Well, and you've got Tom Time tomorrow, the last Tom yes. Time as yes. well. And what kinds of questions are you going to be asking him? I know this is an interesting one because you've already done one of these episodes.
Right.
So the questions to Tom is, how do you do it better? Is that?
I mean, essentially, I still have to go back. I'm going to go back and listen to both the episode again and the judging for it and try and pick out any of the little bits that I missed. That like things that were said and kind of go from there and see where we wind up for Tom Time. But I've been kind of, Tom Time on the fly. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, I can't wait to listen out on that. I'm going to be a fly on the wall for that one as usual.
Excellent.
And of course, I'm really excited to hear episode 2 of yes. Culinary Capers and see what you guys do with it. It's going to be interesting to hear different voices in Culinary yep. Capers than the first time around.
Too. Yeah. The cool thing is it's still, because it was, I was the main narrator. So that part will be the same, but we still have all those, we're going to have all those little interjections and things. And so that'll be varied up a little bit.
Now, are you going to have a folk song that is that ties everything
that
together?
That would be so good. I don't know that I'll be able to find one, but I'm trying because that's the best.
That was really, really good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Amy, good luck this last
Thank
week
you.
Here. And I will talk to you during the finals.
Awesome.
First of all, let me start by saying, Amy, you killed it last week. The risk you had in doing that was being expected or boring, and you were neither. You hit this on the head with authenticity and reality. And honestly, when it ended, I was shocked. I was so lost in listening that I'm like, what? It's over? So well done.
Thank you.
So now you have the easy task of only having one other competitor.
Yes.
You don't even have to make the best podcast. You just have to be better than Alex.
And I know him. I know his strengths. I know his weaknesses.
I like this. I like this, Amy.
Yeah.
So what are you thinking?
All right. So as I said to you, Brian, when I talked to him yesterday, I tried for a very long time to talk myself out of doing Culinary Capers. Mm-hmm. So we actually talked through like a bunch of the other options. The movie one was one that we brought up. And then the video game one was another one that we talked about, but Culinary Capers was my baby. Mm-hmm. Culinary Capers was my idea. It was my show, and it was the one that saved me in the end. So my goal is not to rest on the laurels of like, oh yeah, it's a good show, but rather to prove that yes, this was not lightning in a bottle. This concept is good and makes for a real series.
This is the reboot. Culinary yes. Capers was the pilot. This is the real
right.
thing.
This is the actual episode one, right?
Gotcha.
So that's the plan.
Okay. I like the risk-taking aspect of it. I like yes. I like the boldness of going back there. Yep. What concept do you have for this that's going to make it work?
So one of the things that we're doing, because we did go back and listen to all the feedback from the last one, and so we're trying to incorporate a lot more sort of real world audio and things like that. The story that I'm looking at is there's this guy who made his shed into the number one rated restaurant in London on TripAdvisor.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't exist. And so there's all of this like actual audio. There's people that calling to try and make reservations. There's the guy talking about it. Like all of this is stuff that we have access to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think incorporating more of that in order to break it up a little more, because that was one of the things that was a concern, is that, you know, it, that first show was essentially just me. So we're breaking that up a little bit more, tying it into sort of the current events, because this is very much, you know, the Fyre Festival is such a big thing right now, you know, in terms of like with all the documentaries and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of in that same vein, right? Like this is the like making the like using the social media in order to make a thing that's not actually a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and going into that sort of thing. So whereas the first Culinary Capers was, it was pretty straightforward, mm-hmm. you know, as people steal maple syrup from the evil Canadian maple syrup cartel.
Right.
For the good of the people. Like this one's a little more complicated. There's a little more story to it, and a little more background.
I think, you know, as much as I enjoyed that story, the maple yeah. syrup, you could benefit by really focusing on three acts. Yep. Have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Make sure right. you've got sound in support of that. Like, I'm not saying you have to be a formula, but use right, that right. formula to underpin and kind of as a safety net to say, like, right. what, you know, what's our setup? What's our pinnacle? And what's our, you know, overcoming the conflict in Act Three?
Right.
And just make sure okay. you're hitting all those points. And that'll help you spread your sound out, you know, so that right. you've got a nice right. pace. Okay. And I think you have a good chance of overcoming what the judges, I if I have it right, kind of felt like it meandered too much.
I think so a little. But yeah, it was,
Well, what do you think your biggest obstacle of Culinary Capers was? Let me ask you that.
The first one?
Yeah.
I don't know that one. It went pretty smooth that first one. So I think it was mostly just making sure to tell the story in a cohesive and interesting way, like a compelling way.
Mm-hmm.
And so like one of the advantages we had for that was, like Nicole said, that she had a real personal connection to it because the way we told the story, like she felt guilty about eating maple syrup in 2012 because, you know, it could have been stolen maple syrup.
Right.
So, I think for this one, that's going to be another thing that's going to be something that's going to be a little trickier to capture. I don't think it's impossible, but like to keep that, like, this is why you care about this story.
Mm-hmm.
And then hang on, I have my notes on the feedback. Yeah. And then there's like some production tighten up and things like that. But yeah, and then we had the advantage of like that ridiculous song for the maple syrup one, which we don't have so right. much for this story, but I still think it'll be pretty compelling.
Yeah, I'm trying to find my Culinary Capers notes here.
I have your Culinary Capers notes. Great writing, like the production effects, music, song at the end, a beautiful touch. Only real criticism I had of it. Was I would have liked to have been broken up with more voices. Amy's read was great. It was interesting,
yeah,
but wishing
okay.
for a bit more variety. So yeah, so we're already, that's already on our minds. And that's like the,
make me care and keep the conversation moving is another thing that okay. I had written yep. down. And that's, okay. that's what you're talking about is,
right.
you know, tell them what you're going to tell them and then tell them what you told them. Is
right.
another way of saying that three acts, like, One nifty trick that you can pull sometimes is to give the conclusion, like tell the punchline
right.
and then explore how we got
right.
there. Right. And
okay.
and if
yeah.
that's what if you've got to, it sounds like that could work maybe. For this.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good format for this one because yeah, like without the punchline, you don't really care why this guy has made up a fake, you know, a fake restaurant listing.
The top restaurant on TripAdvisor didn't exist.
Right. Exactly.
And let's tell you how that happened. Right.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and how are you going to utilize your team?
So team. I have, yeah, I adore my team and I'm very excited about it. So Joe is helping with the writing. He was the one that wrote the first one. So, you know, we've already got that sort of format down. And we know each other pretty well. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have that back and forth about, you know, knowing what's going to work, not only for the show, but for how I read and things like that. Monica's going to do some of the voiceover stuff for us, for some of the audio that we can't get. Like, I think there's going to be a couple of the actual review reads in there. And so we're going to have her doing stuff like that. And she's doing research and things for us too. And Bill's going to do some, like most of the heavy lifting on the final production work.
Great. Great. Well, it sounds like you've got a clear concept. You've identified the icebergs that almost sunk you the last time, and you know how to avoid them. Yep. And you're going to be queen of the world.
That's the plan.
what other questions you got?
I don't know that I have too much else.
I have a tactical question.
Sure.
Amy, yes, please.
That popped up with Bill and I working today. So a bunch of the audio that we're looking at is from interviews with the culprit who did this. And some of them have music in the background. It's soft, but it'd be there. And we're trying to decide if it's better to have someone read his words clean or use that audio. And I was wondering your opinion on the difference between those two.
Always better to read them if you can. Always better to have the original if you can. Don't read them. The stumbling block is, do you have the rights to it? And with documentary, it gets fuzzy because there is a fair use exemption for educational, for commentary, and that's sort of what you're doing. And I think you can make that defense. So then it becomes a question of, is it going to sound bad? Is it going to be out of, out of nowhere? They're like, why is there that weird music? In which case, both for your fair use defense and for avoiding that, if you think, you know what, this is not something I want to say, and then the guy said, blah, 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 then set it up to say, in an interview with NBC or in an interview that appeared on 48 Hours, he said the following. And that way people know, oh, this is a clip. And then that background music, that background noise is given context.
Yeah. Excellent.
And you've done the important work of crediting where you're getting it from.
Right. Yeah. Fortunately, most of the stuff that looks like it's going in now are recordings he did of himself.
Where are you getting them from?
We're getting him from a video. He is a freelance writer for Vice. So it's a video that he put together for his Vice article that he wrote.
That's all you need to do is say, in the Vice article he wrote, he included the following, he included a video with the following admission or the following commentary. Boom. And so you're crediting Vice, you're crediting him, and it's setting the context for, oh, that's video that they took from Vice. That's why it's got that weird music behind it. I think that should work.
Cool.
Okay. Awesome.
But that's a really good point, especially if you're wanting to use a lot of that sound, you do want to make sure you credit it. Especially if Vice is out there, like, this is our story. You want to make sure that you're like sending people to Vice and saying like, hey, this is a clip of it for the full interview, that's something you don't want to do in the context of the storytelling, but at the end of the story, you thank people, thank Joe for the writing. Thank Bill thank Monica for the voiceover, and thanks to Vice, for the courtesy of their stuff. If you want to find the full story of him, it's at vice.com. That's the kind of thing that helps with that. And then those are important I's to dot and T's to cross too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
And it shows that you did work. I think that I hadn't thought of it till just now when it was coming out of my mouth, but the judges are going to hear that and even subliminally think, oh wow, they did a lot of legwork, putting this thing together, and that can't hurt.
Right. And it goes back to sort of the interview week when there was only one team that, ask the person, where can people find you?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. It's that the little,
like doing all of the pieces,
all details.
Right. So what do you have an idea what those three acts are? And maybe this may be more of a question for Joe than Amy, but.
Well, so part of it is, I think we do start with the with the punchline, like you said, like that makes sense. 'Cause it starts with, he was paid to write he was paid by restaurants, like real restaurants, to write reviews. He got, it was like $13 a piece to write a good review on TripAdvisor for a place he'd never been. And so that was kind of what spawned his idea of, well, can I make a fake place work? And then, so like that whole thing is sort of the setup, and then it spirals out of control exceedingly fast, where basically like it skyrockets in popularity. And the next thing you know, he's got the number one, like the top rated restaurant in all, like in London. Like this is not, you know, some little town somewhere. Like it's, you know, a big city. And he, and then like, I mean, the finale is he makes it a real, like a quote unquote real restaurant. Like he has a night where he actually serves microwave dinners, but fancied up. Like he has a night where he opens the restaurant. Okay. And after that, things fall apart because people leave real reviews and things like that. But
yeah, I would say, I think looking at it, I just took a quick look. Yeah, there's the act one is the setup, and it actually is him setting up the fraud. I mean, it technically is a fraud, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's him setting up, here's why he did it, here's the three things he did to make it something, and then he got his TripAdvisor listing. Right. And then act two is from getting the listing, all of the stuff that happens between then and when he opens the restaurant for a night. Act three is one night only. This is the event we have. And then it kind of...
And there's like crazy stuff in there. Like there were people like, so they're eating these microwave dinners and there are live chickens running around, and like one couple, like they're leaving and they said, so since we've already been here once, is it going to be easier for us to get a reservation again? Like, and he can't even understand how this is possible. So it's sort of that whole perception thing, right? Like if it's popular, it must be good. And you know,
yeah,
like that's a whole big part of it.
It doesn't sound like there's much happens after he has his actual opening. You know, it's more that it just kind of like he stopped doing it after that, right?
So TripAdvisor did eventually catch on. Like after that sort of one night, it kind of all comes to light, and there's a lot of their, we even got a canned response from them about it, where, you know, it's a lot of the, well, we have people that check fraud, but you know, most of the fraud we get is from legitimate restaurants that are trying to pump up their, you know, pump up their own ratings. And, you know, what benefit is there to having a fake place? So we don't really research that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's not a common problem, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
A potential epilogue.
Right.
He got bombarded with press requests after the article came out, and he started sending lookalikes and substitutes to different press events to emphasize the point of the fakeness of online presence. And I don't know whether or not that's something to include, and we can tell the whole story without mentioning that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I guess the reason I asked is, you can have it be act one is the idea and the setup, act two is the opening, and act three is it all falls apart. Or you can do what Joe said, where act one is sort of the setup, act two is the buildup, and act three is the opening, and it all falls apart. I was trying to ascertain how much it all fell apart there was, and whether it justifies its own.
Yeah,
I don't think you could turn the opening into a whole section just of its own.
Yeah, I don't think that I don't think it falling apart is necessarily like the most story worthy thing. Gotcha. It's not like he actually thought it was going to succeed, you know what I mean? So I think that can just be rolled into. But yeah, I think it's the setup, it's the build up, and then it's opening night and what follows.
And that's your climax, right? Your beginning of act three is he's opening this. Oh my gosh, what's gonna happen? And then it all falls apart after, because he didn't want to carry it through, but B, he also got caught by TripAdvisor and they listed him. Yeah.
And I mean, he had a DJ playing restaurant noises so that people would think there were people cooking, and they had sounds to cover up the ding of the microwave. Yeah. It's pretty intense.
It's such a good story. That's why
and
I'm attracted
to, like, there were a couple other ones we looked at, like there was like a whole vineyard thing and things like that, but it doesn't have that because that was the thing about the maple syrup heist, was it was like, it was a caper. You know what I mean? Like that's sort of the thing. Mm-hmm. It's lighthearted. Like nobody's really getting hurt. Like it's, you know, it's funny. Like it's
yeah.
Good.
The other thing to do is to keep things a mystery, right? Yep. Misdirect people. And Joe, I think you're good at this. Misdirect people into thinking like, oh, so the story is that they created a fake listing. Well, that's interesting. How did he do it? Oh, the story is now that it became the number one restaurant. Well, you told me that at the beginning, but I want to find out how. And then you save that. And he actually opened it and served food as the big reveal
right.
in Act Three. The people who wait, what? He did what? And that's where it gets really fun.
Right. Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. Congratulations. Yay.
Thank you.
And best of luck. Go get them. Go team.
Thank you.
Welcome to Culinary Capers, a delectable discovery of edible exploits from the world of food felonies. And now your host, the queen of criminal cuisine, Amy Frost.
When deciding where to eat, you probably look to a review site on the web. In 2017 alone, 490 million people went to TripAdvisor every day looking for advice. Say you wanted to go to London. It was the top-ranked destination on the website that year. And say you wanted to go to a nice dinner while visiting that fall. When you looked up restaurants, at the top you'd find The Shed at Dulwich, an eccentric alfresco dining experience by an actual shed. They received rave reviews. It was famously hard to get a reservation, but by the reviews it seemed well worth it. But you would never be able to get a reservation. Because The Shed at Dulwich, the number one restaurant in the most desirable city on TripAdvisor, didn't exist. The Shed at Dulwich started 7 months earlier as the inspiration of Uba Butler. Uba was a freelance writer whose first writing job was being paid to write positive, albeit fake, reviews for restaurants. That work built within him a certain cynicism about how the world of reviews worked. He decided that maybe it was all fake, except for the restaurants. But since then, Uba had become a sort of social media gonzo journalist. In the year before The Shed at Dulwich, he had attempted several experiments bordering on pranks. He'd hired a Hugh Grant impersonator to sneak him into a private club. He bluffed his way into Paris Fashion Week as Giovanni Parvari, a fictional Italian designer. And one day, in April of 2017, Uba decided it was time to make the ultimate TripAdvisor fake. A fake restaurant.
This is going to be the site of the fictitious restaurant, The Shed at Dulwich. I want to get The Shed at Dulwich to number one on TripAdvisor.
In order to fake a restaurant on TripAdvisor, you need the same three things a real restaurant needs to be listed. A phone number, an address, and a website. Uba bought a burner phone and his restaurant had a phone number. He put his street address for the restaurant but kept the number off to avoid potential walk-ups. Created a website. The URL was thesheditdulwich.com. Chosen because he lived in the garden shed in the Dulwich neighborhood. The webpage included beautiful photos of the food, but they were fake as well. Most weren't even food. One photo of a salmon and cream sauce was actually a bleach cake with honey and shaving cream. And the menu was ridiculous. We don't have a traditional menu per se. Instead of meals, our menu is comprised of moods.
Comfort. Yorkshire blue macaroni and cheese, seasoned with bacon shavings. Served in a 600 thread count Egyptian bowl, comes with a side of sourdough bread.
Happy. Roasted haddock with champagne and honey. Comes with grandma's minestrone soup starter and a 5 HTP infused chaser.
Lust. Rabbit kidneys on toast, seasoned with saffron and an oyster bisque. Served with a side of pomegranate souffle.
On May 5th, the hard work of creating a fake restaurant paid off. The Shed received its verification on TripAdvisor and was given an official listing. Now that he had his fake restaurant, Uba wanted to take it to the top of the ratings. It was time to build the buzz. He recruited friends and family to write reviews. They were consistently positive, always 5 stars, but mentioned realistic flaws.
If you like Chef's Table, you'll love it here. My husband and I like to occasionally take a weekend trip to London from our home in Warwickshire. We like to explore the quirky sides of London, and we're big foodies. We stumbled across The Shed at Dulwich on TripAdvisor. Apparently, they do not offer online bookings, so I went down the traditional route and picked up the phone. Well, it took just over a week of phone calls to get through and finally book a table. Not ideal, but we were still very excited for our upcoming booking. We were not disappointed. The whole experience was fantastic. Our waiter was so attentive, nothing was too much for him. As the sun was setting, we were offered blankets. We politely declined, one had a stain on it. But a nice touch, adds to the al fresco feel. The portion sizes weren't huge, but the quality was fantastic. The earthy taste and freshness of the food was something else. The menu changes regularly as most of the food is homegrown. What a delightful idea. We will certainly be back. 5 stars.
A month after the verification, the first real reservation call came in.
Hello?
I wanted to book a table for two. I just want to know what your availability was.
Well, we are booked up on weekends up until...
Hi, are you open today?
We are open, but we are also fully booked.
And they kept coming through the next 7 months. And as time passed, the shed progressed up the rankings. 4 months in, and they were just out of the top 1,000.
Can I make a reservation for tonight, or...?
Tonight is fully booked.
5 months in, number 121.
Are you a friend of Jackie's by any chance? Because I think we do actually have something.
I don't know Jackie, no.
Oh, unless you know Megan and David, do you not... You aren't a friend of Jackie's, are you, either?
No, that's not me.
Do you mind me asking how many Instagram followers you have?
I'm not on Instagram.
Oh, unfortunately, we are fully booked that day.
On November 1st, the Shed at Dulwich was the top-rated restaurant in London.
Ah! It's number one.
And it would stay at that position for over 2 weeks. 2 weeks where, again, no one ever ate a meal there. Ubu was getting a little overwhelmed. It was time to come clean on the ruse. But before it all came to an end, he wanted to do one last thing. He wanted to say yes to a reservation call. He was going to open the restaurant. For one night in November, the Shed at Dulwich was a real restaurant. Sort of. Of the 7 tables set up around and on top of the shed, 4 would be filled with actors to help set the atmosphere. They would serve meals. Sorry, they would serve moods, but not really. The shed didn't have a real kitchen, so they picked up ready meals, microwave dinners averaging less than $1.50 for each patron. Ready meals would be upscaled with trendy garnishes of microgreens and truffle oil in order to fit the aesthetic. Uba had the garden set up to be almost ridiculous. Next to the patio warmers there to fight off the November chill, a children's playhouse sat in the corner, populated with live chickens ready to be chosen for dinner. A couple ate on the roof while a DJ played stock audio of a restaurant. Not restaurant music, but the chatter of voices and clinking of glassware heard in a restaurant. The DJ also had a microwave ding to play intermittently so the sound of the real microwave wouldn't arouse suspicion. Phoebe the waitress, one of Uba's friends, served everyone their fanciful culinary experience based on their mood. In reality, each patron ate a cup of minestrone soup. In an actual cup. A frozen dinner of lasagna or mac and cheese. Upcycled with greens, and a sundae, also served in cups for symmetry with the appetizer. During the meal, one of the chickens broke loose. Trevor, the theatrical animal handler who had brought them, managed to wrangle it in, but not before it scared one of the guests. Uba thought that would be the end of the evening. But it wasn't. They stayed. As the evening died down, the real patrons began to leave. Uba feared they were either angry or saw through the gambit, or both. In a presentation a year later, he shared the last conversation with the final customers.
We were seeing out the last customers, and I was really kind of nervous at this point because they seemed like not happy. And I was like, okay, yeah, we'll see you out. And he goes, and the guy who looks angriest goes, excuse me, Stephen? Of course I was using a fake name. It's a fake restaurant. Jesus. Stephen, can I just talk to you for a minute? And I was like, oh my God. So he goes, Stephen, about tonight, is it going to be easier for us to book again next time?
Somehow, the Shed at Dulwich was actually the best restaurant in London for one night. It was the only night the Shed at Dulwich was a realish restaurant. A couple of weeks later, Uba published the article about his 7-month culinary adventure for Vice UK. The very next day it went viral, and TripAdvisor removed the listing. Uba began 6 weeks of media appearances across the globe. You may walk away from this story feeling a little cynical. Butler said in interview after interview that he didn't want that. He thought his pranks shouldn't make people cynical. He hoped people would see his caper in a positive light. If he could make his shed and garden into the best restaurant in London, anything is possible. Of course, in about half those interviews, it wasn't Uba saying it. He'd hired doubles to fake it for him in a final gonzo experiment. He made fake interviews about the fake restaurant he wrote fake reviews about. So yes, you can hear this and be hopeful for improbable dreams after all. Anything is possible.
Audio clips from the Vice video at bit.ly/uba and music provided by Tom Winter.
That was Culinary Capers, Amy and her team's submission for the finals. On the next episode, judging and elimination, where someone will get the title of America's Next Top Podcaster. All coming up on, well, shoot, I just said it, America's Next Top Podcaster.